Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, I see you are wearing a trilobite today.
I am. And it's an awesome necklace. It's actually made by Lucy Lamb.
Yeah, oh, that's my sister.
Yeah, I was going to say, your sister, L-U-C-Y-E, Lamb. Mm-hmm. And it is so cool. It's a trilobite that she actually created by looking at diagrams and pictures. She doesn't actually have the fossil itself, but she did this out of clay polymer, and it is so awesome. If you guys want to check it out, go to her Etsy shop. But it is officially the mascot of today's podcast.
Yes, the trilobite is, of course, a denizen of the Ordovician period. This is an ancient period of Earth that I barely remember from science class.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it would get one illustration, and it's kind of this this world of weird, squiddy creatures and strange-looking, brutal-looking fish, and, of course, the trilobite. And the trilobite always had sort of center stage in these. So, yeah, my sister sent you this necklace, and, yeah, she's on Etsy, Lucy Lamb Designs. So it's kind of the mascot for today's episode. And I do understand that your daughter named the trilobite as well.
She does. Yeah, she did, and she plays with it a lot. She calls it Gong.
Gong.
And it has many adventures. but is that, that's how much it arrests the imagination, I think, that, you know, even a three-year-old is like, whoa. And it does kind of put you in the mindset of, okay, if this creature was hanging out during this era, what was this era like? And as you say, it's kind of one of those periods that gets passed over. You know, Jurassic is much sexier. Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting. And it sort of got our attention when we were reading the book Kraken.
Yes.
Which talks about cephalopods. And in it, the author describes the period as, for a while the seas were deliciously warm and the planet seems to have been a kind of Garden of Eden, a time of nirvana that allowed life to flourish in many different forms. And this became a very important intersection of how life developed, even though, again, this is not what the sexiest period.
Right.
The seas were teeming with creatures.
Yeah, and as we'll discuss, these creatures, as small and non-flashy as they often are, they really laid the groundwork for the many more diverse species that would come in the ages to follow. It's really a fascinating time period when you when you take the time to really think about what it was like 400 million years ago, mm-hmm. An age of supercontinents and shallow oceans, and for the most part, up until the end, generally nice, warm, rich times.
Yeah, and we're talking about a period of about 45 million years, so a lot obviously mm-hmm. went on during this time period. But let's just do a quick overview of the geologic timescale. Because this, you know, in case anybody's wondering, like, okay, I know Jurassic, I know about Ordovician. What I wanted to talk about is that geologists have been working on this since the 1800s, this idea that we can organize Earth time, or deep time, as they call it, mm-hmm. the Earth's history. And it starts with something called boundary events. And a good example of this is the boundary between the Permian and the Triassic.
Well, now, first of all, how old is the Earth? Because a guy at a parade the other day told me it was 2,000 years old.
Okay.
That doesn't sound right, so I thought I'd check it. I think it's a bit older than that.
Yeah, about 4.6 million years.
Yeah.
And so obviously you have to arrange that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And again, we call that deep time.
So we have something like 21 different periods laid out in the map.
Yeah, within these boundary events.
Yeah.
And the boundary events are marked by global extinction, for instance, and that would be between the Permian and Triassic. There's the global extinction, in which a large percentage of the Earth's plants and animal species were eliminated. Another example is the boundary between Precambrian and the Paleozoic, which is marked by the first appearance of animals with hard parts. So you're thinking insects, fish, reptiles. And then within that construct, there are eons, eras, and periods, and then even in shorter time periods of epochs. So we are talking about the Ordovician period today, and as you say, 400 million and change, some accounts 488 million years ago, lasting for about 45 million years, in this warm, soupy, wonderful atmosphere, very tropical, that ushered in so many different species because of this climate.
Robert B. Laughlin wrote an excellent article called What the Earth Knows in the American Scholar, and he gets into a lot of deep issues. But he starts off by really wanting to drive home exactly how big geologic time is and what kind of time periods we're talking here. And he uses precipitation to do it. And I'll link to the article in the blog post that accompanies this episode, but just to hit two real key points on there. He points out that the total precipitation that falls in the world in 1 year is about 1 meter of rain, the height of a golden retriever. From there, he adds that the total amount of rain that has fallen on the world since the Industrial Revolution is about 200 meters, the height of the Hoover Dam. The amount of rain that has fallen on the world since the time of Moses is enough to fill up all the oceans. The amount of rain that has fallen on the world since the Ice Age ended is enough to fill up all the oceans 4 times. The amount of rain that has fallen on the world since the dinosaurs died, that's enough to fill up all the oceans 20,000 times. Or the entire volume of the Earth 3 times, whichever, you know, way you choose. And then he says that the amount of rain that has fallen on the world since coal formed is enough to fill up the Earth 15 times, and the amount of rain that has fallen on the world since oxygen formed is enough to fill the Earth 100 times. So.
Yeah, and he goes on to talk a bit more about how geologists and scientists try to figure out what was present in the atmosphere at different times in the world's history. And if you're interested in it, again, the article is great to go into a little bit more detail about how we can extract this data. But I did want to mention something called stratigraphy, and these are techniques used by geologists to determine the geologic time scale. And something that is quite common that is used is something called radiometric dating. Now, this is a comparison between the naturally occurring radioactive isotope, which is a variant of a particular chemical in a material, and its decay products using decay rates. So a good example of this radiocarbon dating is if you took a plant from, you don't know at this point, but maybe it was 50,000 years ago, it's plant material, and that plant material, when it was alive, would absorb a quantity of carbon dioxide during photosynthesis. And this quantity actually matches the level of the carbon isotope in the atmosphere at that time. And then when the plant dies, it quits amassing radioisotope carbon-14 specifically, and the isotope begins to decay. So we know this decay rate allows us to determine when in time the plant existed and what the atmosphere was like, which is really so cool that we have these sort of instruments available to us, and that's just one part of stratigraphy.
Yeah, though indeed stratigraphy basically boils down to layers.
Yeah.
It comes down to diving down through the layers of sediment that have built up over the ages and seeing what was going on at different levels in the past. Kind of like a really dirty room say, like a 6-year-old kid's room. It's just got toys layered everywhere, comic books, bits of food and mucus and all the things that come out of a 6-year-old. And if you were to go in and start peeling it back and seeing what happened, what point during the last 48 hours that all this accumulated.
Yeah, it's funny to think of it that way, because I think oftentimes when we think about the Earth, we think of it as a static thing.
Yeah.
But you don't realize that there are these layers of sediment that we continue to add, sort of like dust falling on a surface. And this is called biostratigraphy. It's the fossil evidence in rock layers. And if you look at something called graptolites, these are extinct planktonic organisms. They have been and they still are used to correlate the Ordovician strata.
Yeah. I mean, certainly for me, the big thing that always drives home geology is anytime I'm in a mountainous area and you see that fossil remnant of some ancient sea-dwelling creature, and it lets you know that what is now a mountaintop or the side of a mountain was once the bottom of a sea. That alone always just really drives it home for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of common sense in that, just looking at it with the naked eye.
Yeah, vast periods of time, but periods of vast change when you look at it all together.
Okay, so back into the time machine. We are now in the Ordovician period, and as we have noted before, it is warm climate. Most of the Earth is covered in water, and you know, we've got deep water, we've got shallow water, and all sorts of little organisms growing in that.
Yeah, and since I knew I was taking a trip in the time machine, I did bring my smartphone with me with its GPS, and it's just completely going nuts. It has no idea where I am, or even what continent I'm on. And one of the reasons is because this is an age of supercontinents, where particularly we have a very large one by the name of Gondwana, which includes most of the land masses in today's southern hemisphere, including Antarctica, South America, Africa, Madagascar, and the Australian continent, as well as some other little bits like the Arabian Peninsula and the Indian subcontinent, which have, you know, since moved their separate ways.
And so you've got this supercontinent. You also have this atmosphere, which has carbon dioxide levels that are believed to have been between 8 and 20 times their current values.
Right.
And we have the land, which is pretty barren.
Yeah, and a lot of it is underwater, or at least a little bit underwater, shallow seas in a lot of places.
Yeah, so if you were standing there in Earth at this time, just imagine looking around you. Obviously, there wouldn't be any animals. There wouldn't be any insects flying in the air.
Mm-hmm.
What we do have is something called tetrahedral spores, and they're similar to those of primitive land plants like mosses. And that suggests that plants invaded the land at this time. And we have a few animals and plants that began to explore the margins of the land, but nothing really colonizing, you know, beyond the beachheads.
Yeah, it was an age of underwater life. And a lot of this life began in the previous age, the Cambrian. So most of the main branches existed then. But it was during this age, the Ordovician, that things really began to branch out at the family and genus level.
And as we had mentioned before, we've got those graptolites and trilobites, early arthropods. Mm-hmm. We have brachiopods, also known as lamp shells, and chondonants, which are early vertebrates. They're also red and green algae. Very, very festive. Primitive fish, cephalopods.
Yes.
Corals, crinoids, which are these sea lilies with feeding arms that are very surreal looking. And something called gastropods, which are pretty much snails and slugs. And, you know, within this network, you have extensive reef complexes in the tropics.
One of the critters that you may remember from that one illustration in your elementary school science book is the Undocerita, which is an extinct nautiloid creature, similar to the modern-day nautilus, except the shell kind of looks like an ice cream cone. So they kind of look like ice cream cone squid. So that was one of the creatures that definitely had an impact on me when I was little. Well, an impact is saying, well, putting it a little too strongly. I noticed it, at least, when I was a kid, because it's like, hey, look at that squid. It's like a ice cream cone.
I think that's one of the things that captured my imagination is the fact that there are so many creatures during this period that have since gone extinct. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. But, I mean, it kind of boggles the mind to think of the different sorts of configurations and designs of these creatures.
Yeah, though many of these, like you said, these are the roots of all modern-day life.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of these things are extinct now. You have a few survivors of sorts. You have the horseshoe crab, of course, which has really been a successful design that hasn't needed any update in the ages. For the most part, your modern Nautilus is a callback to the cephalopods of that ancient day, as we discussed in our Kraken episode. The trilobite itself is pretty amazing when you think about how many different forms of trilobite there were in those days. There's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 species of trilobite, and we're finding new species of them every day. The smallest known trilobite species is under a millimeter long, while the largest ones include species from 30 to 70 centimeters in length, roughly a foot or two in length, if you want to translate that. So that's pretty amazing, too, because I used to think a trilobite was just, there's the trilobite. That was just one little critter that we just happen to have a lot of fossils of today. But it's just a catch-all for a number of species.
Yeah, well, so the reason for that is because you say 20,000 different species.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can see why it's so successful, because sort of winnowing its way through the ages and trying to figure out what was working and what was not working.
So successful, and that's the other thing, so successful in a time. This was a time when trilobites could just pretty much own the sea. And that their ownership of it really didn't last too terribly long. I mean, longer than, I guess, human ownership of anything has lasted, but certainly they're not around today.
Well, and I'm thinking that a jaw bone might have something to do with this, and we're going to take a break, but when we get back, we are going to talk about how we owe our jaws to the Ordovician period.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day, whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade. At The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at HomeDepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See HomeDepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
All right, we're back, and we're talking about the jawbone and how the jawbone really doesn't become a thing until we're smack dab in the middle of the Ordovician period.
Mm-hmm.
So what did things have before jaws? Well, okay, you have to think back, all right? Imagine, again, these seas. Most of the animals that are really ruling it here are things like trilobites, are things like cephalopods. And you do have some fish, but they're very primitive fish, and they do not have jaws. They have more like slits, and mm-hmm. they're pretty cool looking. If you look up some of the images of these, the Ordovician fish have large bony shields on their head. They have small rod-shaped or plate-like scales covering their tail. They're like armored fish, but they just have that slit-like mouth, and it really limits what they can do. To put a fine point on it here, they cannot run the roost here. They have no chance at dominance. Because it's the cephalopods that are eating everything. Those are the dominant predators. All these slit-mouthed fish can do is just run around and hope that a squid doesn't grab them. But with the development of the jaw, this changes everything. Suddenly, they are the ones who can start becoming the dominant predators in the ocean, and it really tips the scale.
I have this image of a James Bond villain. Jaws, I think it was his name,
yeah,
or Jaws.
Jaws. Mm-hmm.
And now I'm imagining these primitive fish with these giant jaws.
Slap them on.
But you can see where the advantage would come in. There was actually a genome duplication during this period that allowed the ancestral gill arches to modify themselves into jaws. And as you say, this made an enormous impact because these early vertebrates went from being prey of invertebrates in the ocean to dominant predators in their own right. So we can definitely point to that development and say thank you, because can you imagine us without jawbones?
Yeah.
We obviously wouldn't be successful as a species.
We'd just be mumbling around naked while squid and other, or some sort of highly developed squid, I guess, ruled over us.
You know? Everything would be mashed into baby food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some people, that may be your fantasy, but... but
it can be convenient.
It can be convenient, I guess, you know, being... hand-fed or tentacle-fed mush by your squid overlord, but I'm kind of glad it turned out the way it did.
Yeah.
But that's not all. There are a number of adaptations that we can look back to the Ordovician period and say that's where that made it onto the blueprint. So here are just a few of the things that occurred in the Ordovician period, which we can look to in our own bodies and say this is when it made it on the blueprint. Divisions going on inside the brain, mm-hmm. the actual way that our brain is divided, we can look back to that period and say this is when those divisions began to take place. You look to our immune system. You can look at things like the clotting factor. You can look at more complex evolved immune systems, such as antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Keratin in skin became more numerous. Kidneys became popular. All of a sudden, and
the thing to do in the Ordovish period.
Exactly. It's like suddenly you need a kidney. So we started developing them. Additional skull elements, again, like the jaw, the lens and iris of the eye,
mm-hmm.
the inner workings of the ear, and interestingly enough, blood vessels that actually go to the heart.
Yeah. So again, here's the base machinery that we have. I guess you could call it the base model of the human being developed during this period.
Yeah. Even though most of the stuff is going to die out. The changes that take place here are going to influence the next phase.
That's right. And as you say, die out is a huge marker of this period. As we know, the Ordovician began with shallow, warm seas, but the end of the period experienced a 500,000-year-long ice age. And this was triggered by the drift of the supercontinent, as you mentioned, Gondwana, to the south polar regions.
Yeah, that's the thing about this. You look back on it, and it's like this paradise where all of these mm-hmm. little creatures unknowingly are just living it up. in this the shallow seas of Gondwana. And meanwhile, Gondwana is steadily making its way on this path of doom toward the southern tip of the planet.
Yeah, and that's what ended up with our mass extinction here, of some estimates of 60% of marine life wiped out, though not the trilobites. They got to live another day in another period. But the end of the period was marked by a glaciation event, and it's called the Hernation Glaciation. And this is when we saw a drop in sea levels and eventually glaciers across large chunks of Africa and South America. Okay, so this has been driving scientists nuts because they're not quite sure why glaciation would occur.
Because it's a high CO2 level.
Exactly.
This whole age is defined by high CO2, so you have a natural greenhouse factor going on, which, as we all know, tends to melt glaciers and cause global warming.
Right, would have this warm climate. So they're saying, why would there be a sudden change? Now, we say sudden, and we're talking
in a geologic sense.
Deep sudden, time. Yeah. And again, this period was 45 million years long. But there is a couple scientists, and in particular, Timothy Linton of the College of Life and Environmental Sciences at the University of Exeter. And he put out this theory that proposes that the first land plants may have caused a drop in CO2 levels, bringing about the glaciation and indirectly causing the extinction event in the oceans. And so they're saying that if you look toward these, or if you look to early mosses, that they may have released large amounts of nutrients into the oceans, causing vast algal blooms. Okay, no big deal, right? Except for that these algal blooms will then absorb a lot of the CO2 in the atmosphere, and that causes the climate to turn colder abruptly, sort of, and then bringing about the end Ordovician mass extinction. So along with this, though, ironically, is that when the oceans cooled a bit, even more life proliferated at first, because you could have more diversification with these cooler climates. But of course, as that became more and more intense, what you have is less and less regions of the oceans actually being very hospitable. And then, of course, what is surviving is then, you know, trying to get the same sort of food source. And that's what ends with this mass extinction. So that's one theory. It is still somewhat of a mystery. And actually, if you look at all different periods of time and you see extinction, and certainly we think about the dinosaurs, we are still struggling to find out exactly what went on.
Yeah, there's another theory that holds that tectonic activity led to increased weathering, which pulled carbon dioxide from the air and cooled the climate, which then, of course, triggers the glaciers, as we mentioned before. But again, just one more theory as to what exactly was happening here.
Yeah, apparently the Appalachian Mountains, scientists are fingering and saying it's that tectonic activity that actually was sort of the death knell to the atmosphere at that time.
And certainly you do see fossils when you're hiking up in the Appalachians.
Indeed.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in our patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at HomeDepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See HomeDepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So there you go. There's a little introduction to the Ordovician period. I hope that that like me, you maybe give a little more thought to that one illustration in your elementary science book. Maybe you had two illustrations and you were lucky, but I just had the one. And realize that it's more than just one page, one insignificant page out of Earth's history, but a very important chapter. And certainly, if you want to try to imagine alien worlds, you can't do any better than looking back in time at the different phases of life on this planet. This was really an alien world, and certainly the kind of thing we can conceivably find out there in the universe somewhere. Can you imagine landing on an Ordovician world somewhere and experiencing this? Stepping and wading through all of it?
I would just to be able to scuba dive in those oceans would be an amazing thing to see. So thank you guys for time traveling with us, and thank you, Gong, the trilobite, for accompanying us.
Yeah, another thing about the trilobite, by the way, just that I was reading about, is that it is a fossil that you can hold in your hand. And I think that's one reason that the trilobite resonates with us so. Because, it's things like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's a bunch of bones. You have to spend all this time assembling it, looking at it, standing back. But the trilobite, you can hold this little piece of history, this fossil, in your hand. And there's something kind of magical about that.
Well, and I'm looking at my necklace right now, and just even looking at it, it reminds me, it's so sculptural looking, and it reminds me of some of the Geiger stuff in terms like the exoskeleton. And I don't mean it in Geiger in the more horrific way, but the more sculptural, really beautiful parts of nature.
There's a kind of biomechanical aspect to it for sure.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Lucy, for sending that in. Again, Lucy Lamb Designs. She has a few of those on the site as well, I think, some that are made out of black polymer clay.
So, yeah, they're very cool.
Yeah, yours is a limited edition, though. It's white.
I know. And no one can have it. Sorry.
All right, well, let's call over the robot and see if he has any mail for us to read. All right, we received a couple of bits of email regarding our map episodes. We have three of them. As we're recording this, two of them have published, really. We heard from a listener by the name of Martinez. Martinez writes in and says, "Hi, Julie and Robert, it's Cam again from the Philippines, and I was just listening to your episode on maps. Like Julie, I adore maps, not only because they're useful, but because I find them very aesthetically pleasing. To be fair, I don't think all maps are beautiful, but there's a lot that are quite beautiful, especially the really old ones, the ones with here be dragons on the edges, for instance, or the ones from the Age of Sail. They're not all accurate, especially compared to contemporary maps, but I think they're a great visual reminder of a time when the world seemed so much larger and so much more mysterious than it is now. I also completely agree that maps alter the way we perceive the world. It reminds me of a time during my undergrad when my world literature professor showed a traditional version of the world map, pointing out that Europe was in the rough center, whereas the Philippines was somewhere on the edges, almost like an afterthought. The next map he showed was altered, and it placed the Philippines and the rest of Southeast Asia in the center and placing Europe and the United States on the edges. That image was revelatory, showing that the iconic world map isn't as iconic as we thought, but merely one possible way of viewing the world, one made iconic because no one has ever really thought to question it. If one were to put the Philippines and Southeast Asia in the center, my professor asked, would we be as dismissive of our own country and its culture? Likely not. Finally, you two discuss maps in fantasy novels, and I do have to say I love them as much as I love real-world maps. I like knowing where the characters are at any given point in time. I'm a big believer in geography playing a big role in storytelling, so I like having maps when I can get them. The more detailed, the better. But speaking of fictional worlds, I'd like to ask, why hasn't sci-fi caught onto this yet? Sure, there are plenty of ships' plans and such, especially from Star Wars and Star Trek, but what about maps for all those countries set in fictional planets that crop up so frequently in space opera-type novels? There's much talk of interplanetary and intergalactic empires, but why has no sci-fi writer thought to draft up a map showing where all these planets lie? Does faster-than-light travel render maps obsolete? Perhaps, but I would still like to see maps for such empires, or at the very least, maps of the individual planets used in these stories. The only one I know of was one that was done for Star Trek, which showed almost all the planets involved in all the series up to Deep Space Nine, I think. But they're just for Star Trek. If there are any sci-fi series out there with maps like that, or even for just individual planets, I'd really like to know. Anyway, sorry for the long email. Thanks for the great work you both do on the podcast, though, and I hope you keep blowing our minds. Well, thank you. That was some lovely thoughts there on maps from Martinez.
Yeah, that was great. And I'm glad that he brought up the political aspect of maps,
yes,
too, because that's something we could have done an entire podcast on. But that was a good example of how we see the world.
Yeah. And again, it gets down into that area we talked about where you have a map as a vision of the world as it is, but it's also a vision of the world as it is perceived.
Mm-hmm.
What is the center of our map? What is the center of our place that we create out of this space? Like, that's essential to our understanding of ourself and our understanding of physical reality. So
yeah, and our assumptions that we don't even question until, you know, someone says, hey, wait, that's a bit off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you have it. A wonderful bit of listener mail there. If you would like to reach out to us, if you would like to share interesting things with us, be it a personal story, a cool link, a photo, or a bit of art that ties into something we're talking about, you can find us on Facebook, where we are Stuff to Blow Your Mind. You can also find us on Tumblr, where we are Stuff to Blow Your Mind. And we also have a Twitter feed, and our handle there is Blow the Mind.
And you can also drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.